Hello, I'm Keith Perron, and welcome to the best of Media Network Plus right here on PCJ Radio International. Before we go into the archives, let's go to a news story. We're going to be heading to Washington, D.C. Now, as you know, the midterm elections were held this past Tuesday in the United States. And just after the midterm elections were over, U.S. President Donald Trump went after his favorite target, the media. Well, a few things have actually happened. First, the U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions left the White House after being asked to resign by John Kelly. It also came just on the heels of when a CNN reporter by the name of Jim Acosta was banned from covering the White House. We have this report from Thomas Orte.
I was just told to do it.
Okay, well, I have every right to record this.
CNN's chief White House correspondent, Jim Acosta, was preparing for a live television cross, but it didn't go to plan.
I am in front of the White House. A Secret Service officer is asking for my hard pass. Obviously, no hard feelings to the officer, but I am now giving my hard pass to the Secret Service.
A pass he's had for 5 years.
Do you want to take it off the lanyard there?
It comes after a heated exchange inside the White House, where Jim Acosta questioned President Trump on his use of the term invasion when he referred to a migrant caravan making its way to the U.S. on foot through Mexico.
Why did you characterize it as such?
Because I consider it an invasion. You and I have a difference of opinion.
But do you think that you demonized immigrants in this election to try to keep
them? I want them to come into the country, but they have to come in legally. You know, they have to come in, Jim, through a process. I want it to be a process.
President Trump tried to put an end to it.
That's enough. That's enough.
Mr. President, I was going to ask one of the...
And he then had this message for Jim Acosta.
I'll tell you what, CNN should be ashamed of itself having you working for them. You are a rude, terrible person. You shouldn't be working for CNN.
During the exchange, a woman approached the journalist and tried to take the microphone. And in a tweet, White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders says that's why his pass was suspended.
President Trump believes in a free press and expects and welcomes tough questions of him and his administration. We will, however, never tolerate a reporter placing his hands on a young woman just trying to do her job as a White House intern.
CNN has released a statement describing that as a fraudulent accusation, and Jim Acosta has now responded himself.
This intern came up to me. They're describing her as an intern. I don't really know who she is, and attempted to take the microphone away from me. All I can say at that point is that I was trying to hang on to the microphone so I could continue to ask the president questions.
The White House Correspondents Association has accused the Trump administration of using security credentials as a tool to punish a reporter. Todd Gilman is the Washington bureau chief for the Dallas Morning News, and he's on the association's board. He spoke to PM from Washington.
There's nothing that says they have to answer questions, but we get to ask them. And when the White House and the federal government uses the Secret Service clearance process to block the ability of a major television network, that's a problem.
It's not the only issue on the minds of White House reporters. Hours earlier, President Trump sacked his Attorney General, Jeff Sessions. Mr. Sessions had recused himself from the Mueller probe into Russia's possible meddling in US elections, and that meant he had no oversight. Donald Trump was furious. Now he's appointed Matthew Whitaker to the role of acting Attorney General, a man who served as the chief of staff to Jeff Sessions. But more importantly, he's previously called for limits to be put on the Mueller investigation. And that has Democrat Senator Chuck Schumer worried.
It would create a constitutional crisis if this were a prelude to ending or greatly limiting the Mueller investigation.
So now Democrats have control of the House of Representatives. All eyes will be on how they use that power. But White House counselor Kellyanne Conway says there's been a shift in the public attitude to the Mueller probe.
The president and his team have complied with all of the requests, over 1 million pages of documents, I'm told, 33 or so witnesses that have complied or testified or both. And the president even said today, we spent millions of dollars a year and a half. There is no Russia collusion.
Earlier today, Donald Trump described the investigation as bad for the country.
Thomas Arete with that report. And of course, as this story develops, we will bring you more on it. Well, we now go into the archives with a program that was originally broadcast on November the 17th, 2012, right here on the Best of Media Network Plus. And you're listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International. Heard on the World Radio Network, Sky Digital, Sirius XM, and on great partner stations everywhere. Now, India has a population of 1.2 billion people, just short of a few million, making it the second largest population in the world. Now, the only difference between, let's say, India and China, China being the largest population in the world, is India happens to be the world's largest democracy. In India, there are hundreds upon hundreds of television channels, thousands of small and large newspapers, plus an emerging online news culture that more than 100 million people access daily via the internet. So, the media in India is definitely flourishing. To look more in depth at the media in India, we have on the program today Sundit Tandon. He's the director of the Indian Institute of Mass Communication in New Delhi, India. He speaks next to Richard Aidy.
You see, all technologies exist in India simultaneously. So you still have a lot of people bringing out little sheets on letterpress, would you believe it, in various parts of the country. I mean, for instance, in Aizawl, which is in Mizoram, in the northeast of India, the part of India which is beyond Bangladesh, we've set up a branch of our institute there recently. There I was amazed to find that there are about 30 or 40 local papers in a small town, which is hardly, can barely be called a city by any standards. But most of them are single-sheeters brought off on letterpress in the local language. And these kind of papers persist everywhere. India has a huge number of small and medium newspapers, which are done with very low technology. But there has been, over the last few years, a consolidation and expansion of the sort of corporate media houses. That will continue, I'm sure, because with more investment coming in, the bigger chains are expanding and they're reaching out to more and more markets. They're opening up new editions all over the place. So I think that print expansion is going to continue for at least another 15, 20 years. It may, in the English language, start seeing a hiving off, a falling down in the next 5 to 10 years, I suspect. But other than that, I think the print journalism has a very healthy future. As far as television is concerned, I think we've reached a kind of saturation level with a number of channels. We have 800 channels approximately in India, of which about 70 to 80 or maybe close to 100 are news channels, of course, in different languages and serving different regions and different markets. So most of these channels do not earn back their money. It's as simple as that. And they're being propped up by other business interests or other interests, let's put it that way.
Or they're acting as a kind of propaganda arm of a wider concern.
Absolutely. It might be a corporate interest, it might be political, but that's what they are.
What about radio? How much of a player is that?
Now, radio is a very interesting position in India because in all this discussion, we haven't mentioned the state player, which is Prasar Bharati Corporation, which has two arms, All India Radio, which is the radio wing, and they have radio stations all over the country in all languages. They have the news. And we have Doordarshan, which is the television arm. But as far as radio is concerned, privatization was allowed, but it was only allowed for entertainment, for music and so on. To date, radio stations are not allowed to broadcast news and current affairs in India. It's a strange dichotomy. Television is, radio is not. They've been told that if they want to do news and current affairs, they have to take it off All India Radio, and they can rebroadcast that news. So that is the position as far as journalism on radio is concerned. But at the same time, radio stations are expanding. We are going to have another round of auctioning of FM radio licenses. So this has been in the it's been on the cards for a long time, and it's going to be happening anytime now. So suddenly we'll see an increase in radio stations by another maybe 600 more stations coming up in the next 2 or 3 years.
Can I ask you, because you said before something really interesting, which was that all technologies exist in India at the same time, from the essentially almost the hand cranked out pamphlet to, I imagine, to in the larger places, broadband. How much internet access of news is going on now?
It's increasing, particularly with the English language, but also with the other bigger linguistic groups like Tamil and Hindi and so on. I believe the latest figures are something like about 100 million people with internet access. That's not necessarily broadband. That's internet access. And I was reading a recent report that somebody who should know has predicted that by 2020 we'll have about 600 million internet users in India. So it is expanding, not as fast as China, but it is growing. And people are beginning to access news much more online.
What are the most pressing concerns facing the Indian media from your perspective?
The most intense debate that is going on in the Indian media nowadays, and amongst media watchers particularly, is that of content regulation and having some kind of watchdog, particularly for the electronic media. For the print media, we do have something called the Press Council of India, which is supposed to defend press freedom as well as chastise those who transgress borders or limits. But it doesn't have much by the way of powers to punish. It does have a kind of recommendatory role, some kind of moral authority. As far as the television, electronic media is concerned, there is nothing. And there's a huge debate. The channels want to have some kind of self-regulation. They've tried to set up something, but it's proving not to be very effective. The credibility of media, because it's very free, is a bit at stake. And we've had major reports in India, you may be aware of them, that during the last elections, there were cases where newspapers were being paid to publish stories favorable to various candidates. So this, what we call the paid news phenomenon, is something that is of great concern to people in India at the moment.
That is corruption by any other name, isn't it?
Absolutely. There is no doubt about it. And the fact that it's been highlighted in recent times means that the credibility of the media is under doubt.
What about wider corruption? Because in the last figures that we saw from Transparency International, the NGO that concerns itself with corruption, India had slipped down the list a bit and is now regarded as the 95th least corrupt country in the world. Corruption's, I would imagine, a big news story. How well is it being covered?
It's being covered extensively. We've had, I'm sure you're aware, recently many exposés of really multi-million, if not billion-dollar scams. And these are being investigated. They are having tremendous political fallout as well. And you can't escape from reporting on these scams and the corruption.
I suppose I wondered, because there is an extent to which media outlets are owned by companies or families that also have extensive other interests. And you can imagine it would be very easy for there to be a conflict of interest within the one concern.
Well, you've put your finger on it, because on the surface, the media is very free. And the hidden agendas of the media are not always apparent, because the business interests of the people who own the media do certainly have an effect on what is reported. But on the whole, given the fact that different media groups have different interests, I would say that you do get a fairly fair reporting, balanced reporting, if you look at the larger picture.
How well do you believe the news media is serving ordinary citizens in India? I ask because John Lloyd of the Financial Times and the Reuters Institute for Journalism did a piece recently in which he argued that the Indian news media does pretty well for the middle class, the people with some money, but not nearly so well for the many, many more who are struggling.
I haven't read that particular piece, but I wouldn't argue with that. The fact is that any newspaper or media enterprise does well by its readers, by its consumers. It is an industry, after all. And the fact is that the people that are not so well represented in the readership or the viewership, their interests are not so largely reflected in the media. That's in the nature of the beast. But having said that, it's not true to say that the bottom half of the population is totally ignored. There are many, many publications which do devote some space to reporting on issues which concern rural life, the villagers, the schemes that are going on the ground. So it's not completely unreported or completely ignored.
He was saying that for many people, the diet that is served up to them in the papers that they read is essentially celebrities and cricket and not much more than that.
That is true. And films. You forgot to mention films.
Oh, that's right.
And fashion Bollywood is becoming big as well. Yes, Bollywood, or so-called Bollywood, or whatever wood it might be, because you have different woods in different parts of the country. But then that is the nature of the middle class.
But you would argue that there are enough publications that report well on the enormously complicated and diverse country going through some big changes pretty well.
There are, but you have to look for them in the sense that you, if you're interested in finding out about those stories, you will find them. There are some serious publications. There is a very small, but now suddenly it's emerging as a fairly significant strand of long-form journalism. There are a couple of magazines, if not two or three, which do in-depth reporting on various issues, and a few newspapers which are still very serious about reporting serious issues.
Sanit Tandon, the director of the Indian Institute of Mass Communication in New Delhi, India, speaking with Richard Aidy. You're listening to Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio.
Call the PCJ answer line at country code 44-20-3286-1399. That's country code 44-20-3286-1399 and leave your comments and questions. On shortwave, satellite, and the internet, this is PCJ Radio.
Now, believe it or not, we do get emails from people asking us what is an interval signal. Now, as you know, from time to time, we feature interval signals on the program, but unfortunately, we don't go into much explanation, and I think partially this is my fault, because I automatically assume that you'll know what it is. Well, unfortunately, there are some people who don't. Now, just to explain a little bit what it is, there was a time when many international broadcasters, before their transmission, maybe 2 minutes or 1 minute, would play a piece of music or a jingle that was identified with that station. That was to let listeners know that on that frequency at that time, that station would begin a transmission. Now, there are some broadcasters today that still do run interval signals. One of the most famous ones around the world is Yankee Doodle Dandy, which is heard before every Voice of America transmission. There's also the one from the Voice of Korea and China Radio International. But unfortunately, those who are, let's say, not familiar with international shortwave broadcasting wouldn't know this. Now, in case you weren't aware of this, because if you listen to a lot of these international broadcasters online, like the BBC, for example, you're not going to hear the interval signal before the top of the hour. That's the normal procedure across the board. However, I just discovered this past week that is not always the case. One station that I listen to quite frequently is Radio New Zealand International. They broadcast 24 hours a day to the Pacific region. Now, usually I listen to them at certain times when their transmissions can be picked up where I live. But the other day I decided, well, you know what? Propagation conditions are bad, so I'm going to tune into them online, which is what I did. And guess what? They run their frequency changes and intervals when they change frequencies. So I listened a little bit longer this week and discovered that the audio that they're running is the direct audio going from master control to the transmitter site. Now, if you go to the Radio New Zealand website, find out the frequencies and when they change frequencies, and then tune online at that time, you can hear the same thing. And it's quite amazing because in some ways, when I was listening, it was like listening to, well, the old days of international broadcasting. So this is what it sounds like when Radio New Zealand International does a frequency change. If you've heard it on shortwave, well, you can tune away for a couple of minutes. But if you haven't heard it before, listen in, because it's quite interesting and a little bit of fun, too.
E ora pa'i mai nā tātou telefone ia, so tui whee roi tempa pēnei le asa atai au, manu te lina le so. Te yuri umalau le nei le fofong o whinau mai Aotearoa, whaso e foia. That's news in Samoa from Aotearoa New Zealand. I'm Te Yuri Umalau for Radio New Zealand International.
15 Lava, kia ora. It's now 11 minutes to 8 o'clock. Coming up shortly, we'll have the news in Nguyen with Shana Hukui. Change of frequency in a minute from now, moving to 11725 kilohertz. That's in the 25-meter band AM and DRM to 15720 kilohertz in the 19-meter band. That's in a minute from now. Nice to have you join us. The time is now 9 minutes to 8 o'clock. Time for the news in your way. This is Sara Hukui. Good morning.
Good morning.
The Spectrum Monitor is a monthly electronic magazine covering shortwave, amateur radio, scanning, satellites, Wi-Fi, and vintage radio, which is available for any device capable of opening a PDF file. The Spectrum Monitor also covers amateur radio satellites, maritime and military monitoring on shortwave, reviews of receivers, scanners, and software used for shortwave, and more. Annual subscriptions for 12 issues is only $24, with individual monthly issues available for $3 each. If you're already a subscriber, you can renew your subscription by clicking on the Sign Up for 2015 button. MasterCard, Visa, Discover, and PayPal are accepted. For more details, visit our website at www.thespectrummonitor.com.
Hi, I'm Peter Anthony Holder, and I would like you to join me for a very eclectic and different kind of radio show. It's called The Stuff File Program. Where else would you get to hear a well-renowned Hollywood acting teacher, a best-selling science fiction writer, a guy who teaches llamas how to be golf caddies, or the man who has Hitler's toilet, all wrapped up with some of the oddest news stories around? It's a rhetorical question. There's only one place. The Stuff File Program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. There are various ways to catch the show. You can find it at my website at peteranthonyholder.com. Check out my blog at peteranthonyholder.blogspot.com. Find it at cyberstationusa.com, radioforall.net, or simply subscribe to it on iTunes. You've forgotten all those places already, haven't you? Okay, just Google the title. It's called The Stuff File Program, and stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. Catch it, enjoy it, and have a chuckle or two. The Stuff File Program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Radio will never be the same again.
The British DX Club is one of the world's leading DX clubs, with hundreds of members both in the UK and around the globe. BDXE produce a comprehensive monthly magazine called Communication, covering all aspects of the DXing hobby. The BDXE Audio Circle is also available and is a monthly program of DX catches and general chat about radio. For more information, please write to the British DX Club, 10 Hemdean Hill, Caversham, Reading, RG4, 7SB, in the United Kingdom, or visit the website at www.bdxc.org.uk. That's www.bdxc.org.uk.
And that's all we have time for on this edition of the program. If you want to contact us to let us know what you think, and if you have any comments or questions, we'd love to hear from you. Our email address is very, very simple. It's really simple. PCJmedia@gmail.com. Once again, PCJmedia@gmail.com. And do let us know how and where you heard the program, because we have different distribution platforms. So if it's actually through the internet, we want to know. And if it was through satellite, through the World Radio Network, or through one of the partner stations that relays the World Radio Network, or one of our own partner stations, also let us know using the same email address. That's it. That's all we have time for. We'll see you again in 7 days' time for another edition of the best of Media Network Plus. On behalf of the whole team, I'm Keith Pelham, saying so long, take care. 73 and 88 to the ladies.
As I and I say, no bird can fly on one wing. Neither a plane can manage with one engine. As I and I say, no bird can fly on one wing. Neither a plane can manage with one engine. As I and I say, no bird can fly on one wing. Neither a plane can manage with one engine.
This is only the radio. Call life on channel. This is only.